Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. There's been intense debate this week over so-called safe injection sites. Those are locations where drug users would be able to take intravenous drugs under the supervision of trained healthcare staff. Now, the Massachusetts Medical Society strongly supports the idea. The association, which represents 25,000 physicians and medical students, says such sites could save lives and potentially, quote, serve as a bridge to treatment. Well, on Tuesday of this week, the Senate Ways and Means Committee of Massachusetts endorsed a pilot program around the idea. It was included in the committee's version of the opioid bill that's been working its way through the state legislature. But the very next day, on Wednesday, Governor Charlie Baker, who opposes the idea, released a statement condemning the plan, saying that, quote, the evidence is clear that sanctioning heroin injection facilities does not reduce overdose deaths, and these facilities are not a responsible tool to combat the opioid epidemic, end quote. Then, yesterday, Andrew Lelling, the U.S. attorney for Massachusetts, issued a warning that safe injection sites would be in violation of federal law and that drug users and medical staff at such sites could be subject to prosecution. Well, that same day, the Senate ended up backing away from its proposal, voting instead to establish a commission to further study the issue. This morning, WBUR senior reporter and host Deborah Becker had an extensive conversation with Lelling about how his office would enforce federal law regarding safe injection sites.
Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So supervised injection facilities, they seem to be on hold for the time being after yesterday's vote on Beacon Hill. But just before that vote, you issued a statement saying that these facilities violate federal law. Can you explain?
Well, the issue with supervised injection sites is that there are federal laws that prohibit distributing controlled substances, facilitating distribution of controlled substances, or maintaining a premises where controlled substances are stored or distributed or things like that. And supervised injection sites would fall under those laws. They would also fall under civil and criminal forfeiture laws that would allow the federal government to seize a premises in which that kind of activity was going on.
So do you feel that your office would have to use those laws if such a site were to operate in Massachusetts?
Yes. In our view, supervised injection sites are a terrible idea. They are not in the public interest. They do not support overall public health.
Even though that many medical professionals, including the Mass Medical Society, have come out and said that these facilities can help reduce overdose death rates.
I'm not convinced of that. There are a lot of studies out there on the efficacy of supervised injection sites. Something I have noticed is many of those studies are authored by proponents of what is called the harm reduction model. And so I do not take them at face value. In my view, supervised injection sites take a big step toward normalization of a horrible addiction, meaning intravenous drug use, principally of opioids, heroin and fentanyl, things like that. And that step towards normalization runs contrary to the message that the federal government, under either Republican or Democratic administrations, state governments, and the American people have been sort of espousing for years, which is that intravenous drug use is something to be avoided at all costs. And someone who is in the grips of that kind of addiction should be in a treatment facility, not in a facility that facilitates continuing addiction.
Right. But you know what? After I've spoken with a lot of providers, and I think I know what they might say to that. So I'm going to try to get their voice into the conversation as best I can here. They might say, you know what, U.S. Attorney Lelling, the medical definition of addiction is compulsive use, that somebody can't stop using even though they're aware of the negative consequences, and they're going to keep doing it. And because of this fentanyl market, we're concerned that they're going to die. So giving them a place to sort of for people to watch them and get them, maybe talk them into treatment and maybe helping them live, might be a better approach here. And yes, there are laws, but this is a different animal, and certainly fentanyl is a different animal. And they would argue that society needs to take steps to save those people's lives. So yes, it's an illegal drug, but we've got a big problem here. We've obviously got a public health crisis. So what do we do?
I think there are two responses to that. The first is, and you can see this, for example, in the Massachusetts State Senate Ways and Means Committee bill. Sure, people who go to supervised injection sites, the availability of treatment for their addiction will be made known to them, but nothing requires them to take advantage of it. In fact, the bill itself specifically says that it would have to be wholly voluntary. Hmm. Based on past experience, addicts generally, and I'm sure addicts who go to a supervised injection site, are not then going to waltz into treatment because they were handed a brochure informing them that treatment is in fact available. And so I do not believe that the existence of supervised injection sites would result in a materially higher number of addicts seeking treatment. Second, treatment is now available and widely publicized. In fact, we work with treatment providers. We have drug courts now. We help people who wind up in the criminal justice system to deal with addiction, and we coordinate with treatment providers. That is the path that we should take. There is no convincing evidence that I have seen that supervised injection sites lead to a larger number of addicts seeking treatment to get away from the addiction, or that supervised injection sites reduce the number of overdose deaths in a given community.
Let's talk about legal things. San Francisco was supposed to become the first city in the country to have one of these supervised injection facilities. It was actually supposed to open this month, but officials in San Francisco now say they're working through, quote, legal barriers. And some in that city say that they are concerned that city public health officials could face arrest and could be jailed if they are overseeing someone injecting illegal drugs. Is that a realistic concern?
I think what I would say is that if a supervised injection site was opened in Massachusetts, we would seriously consider prosecuting the people involved. This is not an unknown risk, meaning if the state were to open such a facility, much like with the marijuana experience, they're doing it knowing that this is patently illegal under federal law. And again, this isn't marijuana. And so I think you'd see a federal law enforcement response that is extremely different in the context of the opioid epidemic than you would see with something like marijuana. And so I think people would have to do that, would have to engage in opening up that kind of site and running it with eyes open.
Hmm. So that would be anybody. That would be the people coming to have their drug use supervised and the people supervising.
Sure. We do these things on a case-by-case basis. But people who are maintaining, running such a site, facilitating the use of opioids at such a site, I think all of those people are potentially putting themselves at legal risk. Now, I should say, I do think this is a subject where a little more study would be a good thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with, from the public health perspective, trying to better figure out what is the actual impact of these supervised injection sites. I don't think we know that. Harm reduction, quote unquote, is an ideology. It is not a well thought out public health initiative. Proponents of the harm reduction model tend to be people who at the end of the day simply want drug legalization, simply perceive intravenous drug use as a life choice. That is not my view. It's not the government's view. I don't think it's the view of most of the public.
You know, you mentioned marijuana. Marijuana businesses, legitimate, licensed marijuana businesses, are they exempt? Are they safe from law enforcement at this point because of the laws in Massachusetts?
I can't use those words. Exempt and safe, I can't use those
words. Well, what words would you use?
There's a statute, I think I've used the words that I can't, which is to say that if you're running a marijuana distribution business in Massachusetts, you are violating federal law. You just are, and they all know that. So you are doing it with at least the theoretical risk that there could be enforcement. Now, what I have tried to say is what I can, which is I have limited resources. They're not focused on marijuana. Right now they're focused on opioids. That is unlikely to change. When it comes to marijuana, if you're really looking to get the feds involved, well, here are the three ways that you might do that. And that was the point of my most recent statement. Mm-hmm. So, as I've said in the past, I can't immunize the entire state of Massachusetts for federal marijuana enforcement. I don't have that power. Only the legislation the legislature has that ability. And so I think what this issue needs is some movement in Congress so that law enforcement officers like me have some clarity ourselves as to what we should enforce and not. Some movement in Congress on the marijuana issue would, for me, be a boon. I'd be happy to have new legislation addressing the issue. But until then, I have a situation where on the books, all of this activity violates federal law. But on the other hand, what is in the public interest? Is it in the public interest for me to prosecute people buying and selling small amounts of marijuana? I would argue no. It's in the public interest to beat the opioid epidemic. And so that's where I'm going to be focusing. And that will have to be enough for those who are involved in the state-level marijuana trade. There isn't more that I can give them.
And is that same argument, though? Could folks say, well, why not when it comes to supervised injection facilities? Why not say the same thing? You know, you have limited resources. You've got to go after traffickers and other folks and the people bringing all of this fentanyl into the state. Why go after a supervised site where people are could use drugs and try to get them into treatment or distribute Narcan?
Because, as I said in the past when we were talking about marijuana, opioids is not pot. The opioid epidemic is what we are focusing on. That is our number one drug enforcement priority. The reason to go after a supervised injection site if they opened one is because overall it's a terrible idea, at least to me and I think to the Justice Department as a whole, to open those sites because they will run precisely contrary to what we've been trying to do, which is tamp down supply and tamp down demand. And I don't think supervised injection sites help do either of those things.
I mean, I think that what we're talking about really is this intersection between public health and public safety, which often becomes contentious. You say, I'm a public safety guy, and I've got to worry about public safety. And other folks say, we're public health folks. We've got to worry about saving lives. I mean, is this just going to be, do you think, an inevitable clash between these two sectors? Or do you see some way of kind of reaching a compromise?
I think the latter. I think that clashes between public safety and public health will continue sort of on an ideological level because what I have found over time, and it's no one's fault, is that people who are in public safety careers and people who are in public health careers tend to have a different worldview, and the two don't always mesh. But I think when it comes to substantive responses to the opioid crisis, we are slowly inching closer together. I'll give you an example from my side of it. We now spend much, much more time talking to and coordinating with treatment providers than we ever have in the past. I mean, I've been in this business about 17 years. And 10 years ago, it never would have occurred to federal drug prosecutors to coordinate with local treatment or public health personnel. Now we do it every day. Now, the Attorney General talks about it and has talked about it to me. It's a feature of what we do. And I think that is an improvement on our end. I think it's a recognition that you cannot beat the opioid epidemic purely through enforcement. Hmm. What I like to say is we deal with the supply side. We prosecute the people who move and distribute bulk amounts of heroin and fentanyl. But you also have to address the demand side, which is the massive addiction problem. Mm-hmm. I think now we recognize that we're less good at that than we are at the supply side. And so when it comes to the demand side, we have to work with public health officials and treatment providers out in the field. And now we're better at that. Mm-hmm. So I think incrementally, those relationships are improving. And I want to continue to coordinate better with public health personnel because that is only going to improve the final result, which is fewer people addicted to opioids.
Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And Lelling spoke with WBUR senior reporter and host Deborah Becker. We'll be back with more. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.